Great. Again, welcome everyone. My name is Beth Bonney with the iPad division of the Channel Company. I'm delighted to have today a colleague of mine from our partner demand services organization on the Channel Company side of the house, which is the marketing agency arm of the Channel Company, Jade Surrett. The partner demand services organization specializes in helping solution providers kind of optimize their vendor MDF investment from both strategy and planning on through to execution. The interesting thing about Jade's background is she not only leads that organization now, but prior to joining the Channel Company, she led the marketing organization for PC Connection, an organization that many of you are familiar with, a $3 billion national solution provider, and she has about 20 years of channel experience. So welcome, Jade.
Thank you so much. Glad to be here today.
Okay, well, we're going to dive right into this because we've got a lot to talk about today. The great thing about this is that this discussion is fed by very new research that both the Channel Company and the iPad division of the Channel Company have worked together to assemble, done kind of right before the holidays last year. And these are kind of the topics we're going to highlight for you. The full body of this data is encapsulated in detailed research reports and a variety of deliverables that are coming through our new Channelytics subscription research offering, which I'll touch on briefly at the end of this discussion. But we're just going to give you the highlights today. There's much more behind this. As you can see, we're going to talk about staffing. We're going to talk about budgets. We're going to talk a little bit about the various engagement models between the vendor and the solution providers, marketing organizations, and how that's trending, and then finish with the conversation about automation and MDF program complexity. So those are kind of our main discussion topics today. But before we get started, as we often do, we're trying to kind of take a temperature of where you all are in your perceptions about your organization's kind of investment and maturity around the topic at hand, in this case, MDF programs. So if you just take a second, look at this quick polling question and help us understand, in general, how effective you feel your company's current marketing, channel marketing support and funding programs are today in helping your partners grow. So this is a choose one. You could just pick one that's closest to where you sit today. That'll help us just keep this in context as we go through the conversation. Thank you for all doing that so quickly. I'll give it just a second, and then we'll jump two results. A few of you haven't voted yet. Okay, that looks pretty good. So here's what I see. Vast majority of you feel that you're moderately effective in driving the company's channel growth through your current program structure. That's generally good news. A few more coming in with very effective. Okay, good to know. So one more question here. Give you one more question so we can understand where you sit. As it relates to your company's evolution with and through its channel partners from kind of traditional marketing to digital or content-based marketing activities or strategies, where do you feel you sit today as a company? Take a second, please, and if you would, choose one of these. Okay, results coming in quickly. Just a few more coming in. Okay, I'm going to show you where we sit here. Okay, so the vast majority of you, even more than the prior, still making the shift and building out either digital content or digital support strategies and programs with your partners. Okay. Almost 50% well along the way and mature. That's also good news. Interesting, Jade, huh? Haven't really started to pivot yet. No one's at the starting line. Everyone's kind of down the path in some fashion. Okay, well, great to know. Good context. So let's start with the good news, because there's always some challenging discussions to have when we talk about partner marketing in general relative to other skills partners invest in. So the good news to start is that the respondents here, which I will give you context for, is that between 450 and 520 respondents, there are actually two studies that we're bringing together, so a good respondent base, admittedly, this represents kind of the average solution provider, about $3.5-4 million annual revenue, but growing at a high clip, so growing at about 15% year over year. Sort of typical blended model, VAR, MSP, consultant in that order. So what you might consider kind of a traditional small regional VAR or integrators as they show up in your program. And I know many of you do not have that as the profile of where you are spending your efforts and marketing resources today in general with your channel and MDF programs. However, it still does represent the vast majority of the channel community, and frankly, the ones that I think we all recognize struggle the most with investing in, you know, really effective marketing. So, again, the good news is they have management support for marketing. You know, more than half have active participation or sponsorship top-down from their senior management in marketing being an important part of their investments, and they see it as critical to their growth. You know, more than 70% recognize I have to invest in marketing to differentiate and grow my company. That's the good news. So let's talk about how that then manifests or doesn't manifest as we go through some of these other topics. Let's first take a look at staffing. So some of this may not surprise you. The average solution provider today still has about 4 people doing some marketing functions, 3 of which are also performing some other functions. That varies pretty widely based on how they're organized. And they do have plans to grow. As you can see over here, you know, more than a third of them say that they're actively hiring in the next 12 to 18 months. And the average number that they say they're going to hire is 3. Now, how many of those 3 might also do other functions as well is highly likely. We didn't capture that in the research per se, but they are investing in marketing staff, and the kind of skills they're looking for when they hire is very encouraging. They're looking for digital marketing capabilities, social marketing experience, marketing automation and technology, you know, experience, and then content development. And this aligns very much to the kind of skills they're also looking for the vendor community to help them develop if they don't hire for it, or even if they do hire for it. So kind of a generally a positive outlook in terms of the fact that they are investing. Challenging part of this is they, to date, haven't taken a large advantage of the kind of training in marketing that you, the vendor community, have put forth. So, you know, almost three quarters have said, no, I have not taken advantage of any IT supplier marketing training content. But if I did, here's the kind of skills I would like my staff to glean from that training, right? Digital marketing, again, social media. A little bit elevation here on lead nurturing strategies. So it kind of ties to that idea of content marketing, but very much aligned to what they're also trying to hire for, which is encouraging. But, you know, sort of the pie chart on the left, not so encouraging in terms of their experience of using content from your enablement program so far.
Could I ask, do you have any idea why not? Is there anything in the research or any anecdotal evidence as to why they're not using vendor-provided marketing?
I think you'll see some of that come through later in the content. I think it was sort of all over the place. Some may work with suppliers that don't offer it. Some may not even know it's available. I find that some marketing training is kind of buried behind technical, you know, certification and specialization kind of content. It's probably all over the place, but I think it shows up later in the research as well. So we'll
put that
to come back to. Yeah. So as it relates to planning, as we all know, you can't execute well without a plan. And the challenge we've always had with solution providers of all sizes, certainly smaller ones more pronounced, is having a longer-term, more strategic plan. So you can see here on the left that only about a third of them are always planning their marketing activities out. And the challenge is that the contributors to that plan are largely their senior executives. So if they're small and they may or may not have a marketing leader, they're sort of very internally focused as it relates to building that plan, and they rarely get outside help. So outside marketing agencies use just a little over 10% of the time here, and key suppliers marketing staff, you know, again, under 20% engagement in the planning process, which could have a lot to do with the effectiveness of the execution activities they choose to work with. So I know we're all trying to change this dynamic here on the right, but it is sort of where we stand today. I'd like to get kind of Jay's insight to this. So you think of that low staffing level today and a bit of a diffused focus for the people that are doing marketing. What's your experience been kind of the general barriers to solution providers hiring the right people and then keeping them focused?
Yeah, so, you know, this is a really great question. You know, a few of the things that we're seeing out there, you know, one is although, you know, the business is starting to see that marketing is playing a more significant role in influencing the sales process, there is still somewhat of that gap in terms of willing to invest into some non-traditional marketing areas such as digital and social and content development. And really part of that, you know, comes from that little bit of that intangible of, you know, how is it really and truly influencing sales pipeline and revenue? You know, I'm going to invest a dollar or a headcount into this space, and I can't necessarily clearly articulate what it's going to deliver on the back end. So we see, you know, a gap in being able to make that business case there. The second piece is really around skill sets. And, you know, as folks are, you know, starting to make that transition from more traditional into areas such as, you know, digital content development and social, you know, it's being able to find the right type of skill sets, because there are, as you saw, quite a high number of folks still, you know, in the early stages of making that transition. And, you know, where folks are finding people that have those levels of skill set, it really tends to be somewhat in the B2C space or in the retail space, where they've adopted that, you know, so long ago and really are way ahead of that curve. So having kind of that B2B digital experience and doing it in an effective way, if it's not from a large, more sophisticated organization, has been a little difficult to find.
Mm-hmm. You know, it occurs to me when we do a lot of solution provider interviews that it's hard to know what to hire for when you don't have the skill set in your DNA within the existing team, right?
Right, exactly.
The second question, yeah, which is, you know, why do you think it's so difficult for them to engage marketing agencies, you know, beyond web development firms, truly branding strategy firms, people that help them kind of think more broadly and build more strategic plans? And what I've experienced, love to hear insight, is that they don't know how to manage an agency. It takes some sophistication to know how to set metrics and to give a plan and to manage an agency to help augment what you're doing, and that isn't an inherent skill set that we've seen. But what is your experience, Jade?
Yeah, and your comments there are dead on, especially for kind of the median that you brought up just a few slides ago. You know, if we're looking at an average size of about 4 full-time folks within a solution provider marketing organization, with 3 out of the 4 of them, you know, wearing multiple hats, for them to be able to engage outside help, to your point, has been extremely difficult. You know, one, because they don't necessarily have bandwidth or even the skill set to be able to have, you know, that strategic level of discussion around the things that they need, what they're looking to accomplish, and, you know, partnering with them to get them, you know, to the other side of that. And, you know, versus being able to, you know, leverage an agency to help provide that direction and that strategy and, you know, optimize their existing MDF investment that they're getting versus, you know, sometimes there's that perception that an agency is expensive. And, you know, so between skill set, bandwidth, and, you know, cost perception, I think that there's, you know, several areas that are kind of that barrier to, you know, partnering with someone that could truly help them kind of take it that next level.
Yeah. And we'll talk more about that outside help in terms of vendor-supported and vendor-managed engagement models here in a second. So, okay, let's keep plowing ahead here. Let's talk a little bit about the budgets themselves. You know, at a high level, the findings are that the budgets that are currently allocated to marketing are informal, they are inconsistent, and they don't align with this top-line growth expectation that the partners have, which is somewhere between 14 and 15%. So look at that data here. So on the left, we actually did break this out by number of employees and or it shows up in annual revenue bands by partner, you know, size elsewhere in this data, but you broke the budgeting to, you know, by a point size here relative to the formality of the marketing budget. So you can see the larger they get, not a big surprise, the more formal their budgeting process for marketing goes. You know, with 71% of larger organizations having a formal budget. But even at that, 71%, I'm sort of surprised, isn't higher. And this is not the staffing part. It's just pure kind of OPEX and, you know, cash flow kind of spending around marketing. On average, they are spending about 8% of the company's revenue on marketing. And that actually didn't vary that widely based on revenue band of partner. It was somewhere between 6.8% and 8% in general. But nearly half of them are spending 5% or less when you sort of break it out, you know, the truly small companies. You may all have your own metric about whether that's a big number or a small number. 8%, not a pittance, but 8% of a small revenue growth target is still doesn't necessarily drive a lot of growth. The more telling part is that still today, less than a third of the budgets from the vast majority of these respondents is being spent on digital marketing. And you'll see here in a second the kind of marketing they are doing. It's still, in many cases, event-based, non-content-based, very traditional sort of, you know, project-based activities. So the challenge here, again, is the budgets tend to be small. They're not always solidified and stable, and they're being used in large on legacy activities. If you tie that over to kind of technology funding, the good news is the respondents feel that the suppliers are supporting their marketing activities in general, you know, nearly 80%, and that can come through, you know, tools, process, people, distribution support, et cetera, but almost 60% feel that they're not getting funding from suppliers. Now, that may be, I'm not getting it regularly, I'm not getting it all, et cetera, but, you know, given this size solution provider, not a big surprise that the majority of them don't feel like they're getting funding with any predictability from their suppliers. And that when they do get the funding, that these are the expectations from the vendor community about ROI on that investment. And we'll talk more about this here in a moment, but kind of what we call sort of bottom of the funnel metrics, right? So deals in the pipeline, sales, you know, ready and machine leads, building the vendor's brand as opposed to the solution provider's brand, and again, building awareness of the vendor's tech product or solution specifically. So that this is where one of the big disconnects often happens, right? Particularly for smaller partners that are very broad generalists in their markets, then building their brand and taking your components and integrating them into their campaigns, their ability to do that successfully versus sort of touting your specific elements of their solutions. This quote, I think, kind of maybe embodies the challenge the most, particularly for those smaller providers that are mature and are desiring to plan ahead and have a long-term investment plan. This disconnect between quarter-by-quarter approval of funds, quarter-by-quarter approval of plans versus the ability to have line of sight to a longer-term budget and to really put a, you know, an annual plan in place. We hear quotes like this all the time, and it's not necessarily just from smaller partners, although it tends to be exaggerated more with smaller partners. So, Jay, you know, it's been years we've been talking about this. How do we get ahead of the curve, plan further in advance, budget further in advance, get partners to think longer and more strategically? Can we break this cycle? What are you seeing in terms of how we're getting out of this tough chicken and the egg scenario?
Yeah, and as you mentioned, Beth, I mean, this has been a long time challenge, and it's prevalent everywhere. And all the solution providers that, you know, we currently speak with, this continues to be, you know, one of the number one challenges that they're faced with is that, you know, as they are trying to be more strategic and planful and, you know, transform the things that they're trying to do from a marketing perspective to, you know, generate or identify new opportunity, it becomes increasingly difficult when, you know, investment or budget allocation comes late, you know, well after the quarter or half starts, it becomes a challenge when, you know, for plan-based investment that, you know, plan approvals take time, and so that speed to execution and speed to market becomes increasingly small. And then on the back end of that, you know, the expectation from the vendor community is still there to drive pipeline and revenue results within that quarter or within that half. So, you know, the challenge is definitely real, that, you know, they've got shortened windows of time to try to execute, and it makes it so instead of being proactive and strategic, they end up becoming tactical and reactive. And again, we're seeing that everywhere. So to answer your question in terms of breaking the cycle, I mean, it comes down to a few things. You know, wherever, you know, vendors can, you know, get ahead of those planning cycles, you know, create the time and space to be able to, you know, talk through plans with their partners, get ahead so that way, you know, they're actually going into market as the quarter starts or as a half starts. You know, I know it's easier said than done because this is a, you know, been a long time issue, but that's really where, you know, we could see some significant gains on more impactful programs coming out of partners that would yield a greater return on the other side.
Yeah, I've definitely seen some programs that do a better job of planning at least in 6-month increments, and that's without an accrual-based program, but kind of, you know, MPF,
right,
proposal-based allocations, some predictability for partners to be able to at least plan in 6-month increments and to encourage the plans for the middle, you know, at least 60 days before the quarter starts. I think we're starting to get better about training each other to team that way.
Yeah.
I think the bigger challenge seems to be that it's this, it is the chicken and the egg, right? The small stay small because they don't have plans, they don't have staff, they're not planning ahead. And so it's easy for MBS programs with limited funds and high ROI expectations to continue to give the money to the bigger folks, whether those folks are driving the best results or not, or have the highest growth potential or not, but they get the big, you know, most of the funds, and the small tend to just, you know, atrophy on the side a little bit. So have you seen scenarios where we're doing a better job balancing the focus and the MDF allocation across different profiles and sizes of partners so we don't continue this cycle of the big stay big?
Yeah, and, you know, that's also an interesting question because, you know, sometimes there's a little bit of the one-size-fits-all approach, you know, in some pockets. And then in others, you know, it's really having the awareness of, you know, some of the up-and-coming partners that, you know, may be not necessarily at a large revenue size to date, but they've got the growth opportunity to transition and transform into a larger, you know, partner opportunity for the vendor. You know, some are doing a great job of taking a step back and understanding that those tactics and strategies that they may need to employ are different than what they would utilize with more mature business partners of theirs, right? So some are able to effectively do that and pivot accordingly and understand that those strategies need to be different, and others, you know, are taking, again, a little bit more of that one-size-fits-all approach. And I think, you know, this is an area especially that if you, you know, take that step back and truly understand, you know, the type of partner that they are, the type of growth opportunity that they have in front of them, you know, are they an emerging partner of yours that you need to make a different level of investment in? And then lastly, it's really, you know, making sure that the appropriate expectations have been set for that investment, right? So if initially it's driving more of awareness and engagement type of activity, you know, the expectation of that investment on the back end shouldn't necessarily be pipeline and revenue right out of the gate. So it's definitely that balance of who they are, what they're about, the growth opportunity, and the types of strategies and the variation of strategies for each partner type versus one size fits all.
Just on a tactical level, some of the things that I've seen in particularly working with vendor-approved or sponsored kind of agencies is either the agency and or the regional marketing team from vendor gets sort of a small bucket, small but predictable and focused bucket of money that doesn't necessarily tie to the traditional proposal-based requirements, and they can sort of dole those out locally based on, you know, diamond in the rough kind of partners that they see have capabilities but may not be as active in the MDF programs or familiar with how to sort of go about getting the money, but the sort of the local discretionary funding that is being able to use a little bit outside the traditional rules. And some of those programs have gotten some great success. So the top-down budgeting process is always a challenge, and resetting expectations with our own companies about when that ROI shows up is kind of a journey issue, you know, not a destination, so to speak. I think we're going to be dealing with that for some time. Okay, so let's look at kind of general engagement models. We look at this a lot, and this is actually a big section of the Channel Masters training we go through, which is this sort of the nature of the relationship between vendors and their solution providers in the marketing discipline. And it relates to sort of where you all build your assets and, you know, where you track consumption. So we look at three really basic models: vendor managed, vendor supported, and partner self-serve, kind of in the inverse order of how involved you are. In the past, like in the last 5 to 7 years, partner self-serve was a much smaller part of the kind of proportion of engagement models. It was somewhere in the mid-30% of partners were coming into your programs and using your services and content that way. Now it's much higher. As you can see, when we break it out by annual revenues of partners, the smallest on the top, the biggest on the bottom, there's a fairly high degree of consumption of self-service content and tools by all sizes of partners, which I think is the good news. All the work you've been doing to build templates and syndicated content and, you know, kind of templated campaign materials seems in general to be, you know, meaningful to everyone. The degree of growth in the vendor-managed and vendor-supported dimensions, though, has been sort of exponential. I think that's because some of the agencies you've worked with are your own kind of field teams that have formal services that work with the partners, you know, not necessarily locally, physically, but, you know, in their own respective markets, have been very successful by many stats. So interesting to watch the vendor and managed and supported elements growing. And as you can see here, they're currently being used, as you probably would expect, by the larger partners most commonly. But it would stand to reason that the better we get at that, the smaller partners who have the least capabilities and the least staffing should begin to consume them more frequently if they're priced right and, you know, as accessible as possible to address that very, you know, skills and staffing deficit that we just talked about earlier. So let's just keep kind of going with this. So when they engage in one of those three models, here are the kind of activities that they're using. So this is the frequency currently that they're using these kind of activities. Not a big surprise, trade shows and events were there, continues to be number one, and that kind of static social media content, posting things on websites, posting things on LinkedIn, so on, is number two, although that in the past has been much lower. It's good to see that that's sort of popping up. So these are stack ranks, as you can see. The ones that require more unique content development, blogging, you know, white papers, lead nurturing strategies that are sustained based on content over time, rank quite a bit lower. But the ones that are highlighted there by the partner's own admission, they perceive to be most strategic, ones that they have to invest in and learn how to do better. Content marketing and SEO kind of make the most sense. Telemarketing and appointment setting, I know many of you have these services in your programs. I think the challenge there we continue to see is connecting that activity with, you know, their ongoing and sustained kind of content marketing. So it's not just really short term, come to an event, you know, meet with my rep, but it's based on, you know, kind of the culmination of a longer term content campaign. So I don't know if this stack ranking here surprises you much, but it didn't surprise us a lot based on what we hear from solution providers that we talk to. So on that note, you know, building self-serve content on portals and, you know, is no small feat. It's a very significant endeavor and an expensive, sustained one. So given that it seems to be kind of marginally relevant to everyone, Jay, where do you think that should fit in the priority of vendor marketing programs today?
Yeah, I mean, certainly, you know, given, you know, the data here, you can see that, you know, especially with those smaller partners, it's a significant contributor to the things that they leverage as part of their, you know, marketing strategies and tactics for sure. And then even as you move up the stack, you can see that there's still utilization there, but especially with the larger or largest type of partners, it's really content consumption that they're leveraging copy blocks for and things of that nature, not necessarily taking an asset, putting a logo on it, and sending it on its way. And so, you know, we obviously are very, you know, very well aware that, you know, from a vendor investment perspective, this continues to be a place where folks are making a significant investment just to try to make things, you know, more scalable and efficient for, you know, for a solution provider perspective. But we're still seeing, you know, the desire to, you know, also have some, you know, uniqueness for themselves to be able to have their own brand, their color palette, their look and feel, you know, integrated in somehow. And so, you know, really where, you know, folks should make their investment is, you know, certainly keep the content coming. It's being utilized. You know, areas such as persona-based content is something that we hear from the solution provider community that they desperately need, especially as they're trying to make that shift into more digital and content marketing where it's going to, you know, go more further down a path and take someone through a journey. And so that's, you know, also an area from either persona or vertical perspective where, you know, we've heard they need a lot of help. And then the last piece I would suggest is that especially for the small organizations, and again, just to refer back to the data that said, you know, there's an average size of 4 people within an organization, many wearing multiple hats. Once they actually get the content, many of them still are not sure what to do with it. And so, you know, it's being able to make some recommendations on how to more effectively leverage that content and create strategic plans that will then turn into, you know, optimal, you know, pipeline of revenue further down the funnel, I think is a good area to focus on as well.
Right. Because we saw earlier the strategic planning and outside engagement with planning, even at the campaign level, seems to be pretty low. So the assets can be fantastic and highly customizable, but our ability to link them together still seems to be challenging.
Yeah.
If you presume that content-based marketing draws that timeline out even longer, I guess it exaggerates that deficit of skill, huh?
Yep.
Yeah. So as the increased resources and outside help that vendors are engaged to help partners through this planning and execution transition locally, if your agencies or even your own staff have increased, how does that relate to the partner's ability to be more sophisticated and do content-based and digital marketing? Is there a correlation between those two?
Yeah, I think so, you know, based on some of the things that we've seen across the vendor community for sure. You know, we've seen an intentional effort to transition investment and directed investment into digital and content marketing type strategies, which has been extremely encouraging to see. I think some are moving at a faster rate than others. I think others as well that may be a bit behind in that understand that it's a necessity and understand that there's a need out there, but still there's that gap of trying to articulate the value that it brings to the business and the value that it helps in driving targets further down that path to purchase and influencing opportunity. But again, we're definitely starting to see some intentional shifts of investment into that, you know, digital content space, which is great. And, you know, they're starting to really understand that, you know, a big chunk of the IT, you know, buying decision today is being done through online research before sales is even engaged. And so, you know, it's so critical that folks that haven't quite embarked on that journey yet start to, because they're going to miss, you know, the opportunity of getting their solutions in front of the right people at the right time when they're ready to research, and their competitors will be there instead.
Mm-hmm. Seems like from a lot of solution providers we talk about, when you look about where they're spending their time activity-wise today, they haven't bridged in their mind the gap between these traditional, more event-based or isolated activities like trade shows and events to the longer-term sustained looking at kind of persona-based marketing. Like, in their minds, they're mutually exclusive, right? I think that,
yeah.
that connecting that bridge for them is then part of the challenge, particularly if they're really behaviorally set into, you know, an event a quarter or some a tactical set of activities that drive that quarter's, you know, goals.
Yeah, and I think part of that as well, sorry, I think part of that as well, and you're right, is that a lot of the marketers within the vendor community definitely see the importance of, you know, the areas such as content marketing, SEO, social media, lead nurturing, you know, things of that nature. But at the end of the day, you know, all of us across, you know, the vendor community, solution provider community, et cetera, still deal with that age-old marketing and sales alignment piece, right? And so, you know, some of what is holding back that transition is at the end of the day, the expectations from sales is that it's going to produce pipeline and revenue, period. And so, you know, many times marketers are forced to kind of go back into traditional activities because of the pressure from the sales organization is so substantial that they need to deliver pipeline of revenue. And so they fall back on things like appointment setting, events, you know, things of that nature.
Yeah. And again, not mutually exclusive from having an underlying longer term, you know, branding and persona-based marketing campaign. But
right.
if a dollar and it can only go one place or the other, I understand that pressure. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, let's kind of wrap the conversation here with a discussion about kind of where the operational implications of all of this fit and the ties to the support they expect from the vendor community. You know, we continue to hear about how critical it is for, particularly for digital-based marketing, of course, automation investments and trying to take costs out of the process for the partners by keeping the MDF programs as simple as possible. So what's interesting about that is when we ask the most basic questions about do you use a marketing automation system as a company today, here are the somewhat sobering responses. 84% said no, 60% said yes. And even the companies that are 100 to 500 million in annual revenues, you know, less than 25% of them have invested in the marketing automation system today. Now, I don't think that means that they're not using any automation at all. It means that they're not using it broadly to run, you know, and monitor and report on all their campaigns. Because I certainly talked to a number of solution providers in this band here on the right that that have investments in this area. But as a general rule, this seems to be a pretty obvious barrier to more effective, you know, digitally based campaigns going forward. And you know, I'm sure many of you have a kind of philosophic funnel slide that looks like this. I'll let Jay talk to this because this is kind of how we interface with solution providers all the time. But the connection between marketing activities and the sales mentality or the ability for sales to sort of know where they link it to that seems to also be a pretty challenging shift to move to digital-based marketing. But Jay, go ahead. Tell us your thoughts on this one.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, this is a chart that we built out just basically showcasing that, you know, the expectations from sales is customer acquisition and obviously, you know, warm opportunities that they can then, you know, close. And really that forces the partner marketing investment to go directly down into bottom of the funnel activities, which these days start to then produce little to low, you know, results or, you know, transitioning not so great leads into the organization that then sales say are terrible, right? I mean, we've all been there. And so, you know, it's really helping them understand that they've got to transition those investments from bottom of the funnel activity into top of funnel activity first to then further bring it down that path to purchase and bring more higher quality opportunities into the sales organization to further nurture and work. So it's being able to, you know, identify the right content marketing strategy, understand where the gaps are, putting together, you know, persona-based content, et cetera, driving then, you know, traffic into their website, engaging with that content, moving through top-of-the-funnel type of activities, and generating, you know, initial leads that then can be further nurtured in the middle of the funnel with different types of assets and content. And then lastly, finally, you know, moving into bottom of the funnel activity, which will yield, again, a much more higher quality target to further nurture and for sales to identify opportunity with.
Right, and a concept that's a little difficult to get a salesperson's head wrapped around when you don't have a system
exactly.
that knows where the body of customers, both new and existing, are on this journey. It's an intangible, right? That's sort of a, you know, it's not front of mind because if you can't capture and report it, it's not real to many salespeople. I get that. So let's look at the metrics that are attached to that then, right? So this is kind of how we progress from the top of the funnel to the bottom of the funnel. These are some common metrics that we're working with other solution providers and their vendors on campaigns to capture. So tell us about this.
Yeah, so essentially, you know, we try to break metrics up into three major areas. And again, you know, when you've been in a more traditional model that's all about pipeline and revenue from a marketing investment perspective, this really starts to create that shift from traditional into today. And, you know, there's tons of different metrics out there, and sometimes it can be overwhelming, especially for those solution providers that don't necessarily have bandwidth and or potential skill gaps. And so it's being able to say, you know, from a visibility perspective, the things that we're doing that are more top of funnel, how is it driving, you know, visibility of the brand, visibility of the solution that's being positioned and the value that you're providing. And then moving towards, you know, middle of the funnel, how is it creating engagement with your content, you know, ultimately starting to, you know, create some expanded, you know, social engagement, asset engagement, you know, things of that nature. And then lastly, how is it performing against goals and objectives that were established as part of the campaign or the marketing strategy? And of course, revenue and pipeline can certainly play into that, but there are some other conversion metrics that also should be looked at. So for example, if the goal was to drive 50 assessments for their technical engineers to facilitate, then you know, you'd be measuring against that goal. And if your marketing efforts converted into 50 assessments, then you've achieved it. Ultimately, you will then measure those 50 assessments to see if pipeline or revenue were established, of course. But it's getting them to look at things in a lot of a different way across these three major areas to really showcase how it's moving further down the funnel and going back to their organization to say, you know, here is how marketing is influencing the business.
Yeah. And tying sales and marketing together in the awareness of that, right?
Yep.
Yeah, I think the more advanced MDF programs that we've seen have the ability to reward the partner for capturing and reporting on all of these, not just the conversion level. That's the first kind of critical success factor. But some of the programs actually have a higher rate of in reimbursement, funding reimbursement to the early funnel activities to kind of weight the partners to kind of shift there so they can build a longer-term sustainable, you know, base of audience marketing. And so there's sort of mechanical ways you can shift the focus and reward more activity earlier in the funnel, but just being able to capture them all and reward them based on the campaign is, I guess, the starting point. You know, so this is the last part of that vision, which is when we ask the solution partners what are the biggest barriers you face when you're working with your leading suppliers around MDF and co-marketing. Here's the responses, the top three on the left. Complexity or time involved with the administration, basically, of the program, either the upfront approval process, which is what we hear most, and or the claiming and reimbursement process. And then the second one is kind of what we just mentioned, is the rules around what's eligible for reimbursement and to what degree and how frequently that changes. So the consistency of it is a challenge often, particularly if we're trying to evolve the programs and give them more choice and more metrics to report against. The rate of change can be kind of overwhelming for the little guys particularly, right? But I think it's really interesting to see that not enough money or insufficient MDF is not the first issue. You sort of assume more money, more money, more money, more predictability, as we heard earlier, which is valid, but it really is ranked third here, which I think is very telling in terms of the kind of time involved for the partners to get actively involved in these programs. It's really more about complexity and predictability here. You can see kind of the stack rank list here on the right. Also interesting to see that insufficient vendor marketing staff, like I need more help from people, is just on the list, right? Less than a third of folks responded there. Now, I think part of that is the little guys aren't used to having regular field marketing support or people to rely on necessarily, but I think it's perhaps more telling that it's particularly for the little guys, it's the fifth issue on their wish list. So we just talked a little bit about metrics here in top of the funnel versus bottom of the funnel. Dave, you know, they're both valid, right? They both have a place in the lead nurturing cycle. How do we strike a balance between those in what we as vendors ask of the partners for ROI?
Yeah, this is by far probably the biggest question that, you know, we talk about on a very regular basis, both with the vendor and the solution provider community. And, you know, traditional metrics continue to be the primary focus, especially if there's a challenge, you know, within the sales business. They immediately go to how are you driving pipeline and revenue, period. And, you know, we're certainly not here saying that you have to swing the pendulum right from, you know, traditional activities all the way over to, you know, digital activities. But there is that opportunity to create that balance and really start to measure things through that funnel and start to be open to the fact that, you know, getting things out there to influence top of funnel, you know, doing activities that will influence mid funnel absolutely have a place and do influence the sales process. And, you know, being able to embrace that visibility and engagement absolutely play, you know, a strong part in that conversion process is really where that bridge or that balance between, you know, traditional and digital activities can really start to kind of play in harmony together versus automatically just looking at conversion alone, which is a majority of the time.
Yeah, I've also seen some great enhancements to sales training programs or sales certification programs from the vendor community in the last couple of years that literally train that sort of in the spirit of this whole business outcomes, you know, holy grail we're all working towards of tying the concept to social selling and, you know, kind of community development to be not just a marketing responsibility, but a sales responsibility and kind of driving the collaboration between the sales process and the marketing process in that way. Yeah. So it's showing up in vendor sales training content now, which I think will help longer term because it's certainly not for legacy IT salespeople a necessarily you know, legacy skill. So that's encouraging. So on the simplification part, you know, we hear complexity very frequently in terms of feedbacks about MDF programs. Are you seeing much simplification in the programs that you're either working with today or that the partners that you work with are on the receiving end of?
I wouldn't say it's necessarily simplification. I mean, certainly we are seeing, you know, more complexities in terms of compliance and claiming and requirements in terms of brand guidelines and the types of activities that investment will be approved for. So, you know, I think that there's, you know, there continues to be, you know, a lot of red tape in those respective areas. You know, where we see a little bit of simplification is, you know, one, vendors are really trying to help support, especially those mid-tier and smaller-tier solution providers, you know, start to partner with either folks within their organization to help them utilize their concierge services more effectively, one, and two, you know, areas where they're starting to engage marketing agencies like Partner Demand, for example, to really help them optimize and, you know, optimize that MDF investment and, you know, facilitate strategy through execution on their behalf to, again, help them, you know, make them more effective. So, you know, which really helps to kind of simplify the process for them where, you know, they may be, again, very stretched or wearing multiple hats or, you know, have some skill set gaps. So I would say those are the two areas that we're seeing it, but in terms of, you know, timing of getting approval for MDF or, you know, getting dollars to begin with from an allocation perspective, you know, we're still certainly seeing some lag there, as well as, you know, again, the complexities of compliance and claiming and what types of activities, you know, continue to get stricter and stricter in terms of where they can utilize their investment.
So with everyone's continued investment in automation, either PRM systems or the marketing automation systems themselves, doesn't sound like that's necessarily yet helping a lot in terms of timeliness or simplicity.
Right. Mm. Yep.
Okay. Well, here's kind of the tie a bow around it question from the from this study from the solution provider. So most important support for suppliers to provide in the next 12 to 18 months to support, you know, marketing driving growth. Good to see that there has a good appetite for training and skill development for the staff, even those they have on staff today and or the new ones that they're training. So even though the consumption historically may not have been high, it sounds like there's a great appetite for that, and there's all kinds of examples of best practices that I think the vendor community is investing in for marketing training, marketing certification programs even now, certification in marketing being required at the top levels of your programs, et cetera. So it seems like we've now elevated marketing, you know, maybe not on par, but moving up the stack to hold its weight with both sales and technical skills. So that's great. More MDF available for innovative or strategic marketing campaigns. I think this is more the, I'm going to do something a little bit different that's not on your approved activity list. Can maybe it's a combination of some demo gear and a funded head and, you know, a sustained campaign, something that is a little bit outside the norm, being able to, you know, pierce through the noise level and get some funding, number two there. And then here's, you can just see the complexity of the administration process and the program itself as number three. I don't think we can also underestimate this request for use cases. So show me how other solution providers are doing it. Help me benchmark my spend, my staffing, you know, how long my campaigns are. You know, show me examples so if I'm not aware of doing some of this creative marketing, how to do that. And that's certainly a case to be made for using an outside, marketing services firm that has a broad breadth of use cases and capabilities they can share with partners, not just in one major metro region, but, you know, by vertical, by PO, et cetera. So I think that is something we can all spend a little bit more time on. So here's how they wrapped up their wish list. What is a best-in-class supplier marketing program look like? As you can see, it's a bit of a smattering of things. You know, simple portal. I hear this all the time. Make it easier to get into the content through one or two clicks, not eight or ten clicks. Organize it in a more logical way, divide market or persona or vertical or what have you. They still want the self-serve content. Some, as we have already identified, have more ability to use it effectively than others, but they, you know, the consumption of it is way up from the last 3 to 4 years. And you can see down below, so I don't have to necessarily read through all these, but I would also say that the ability for maybe not the smallest, but sort of the mid-size and services-led partners who go to market and largely in vertical market capacity, those use cases and vertically-oriented campaign materials are becoming much more desired and effectively used. So I mean, I know many of you have not just marketing campaigns organized by vertical, but whole architectures and, you know, solution campaigns and sales processes and so on. So the vertical market orientation to this, I think, is going to become that much more important, particularly as we move more into emerging technologies like IoT and things that are inherently vertical. So here's just kind of your wish list. And the companies that are listed here are only there because they were written in as the best practices example. So we ask who does it particularly well against this wish list, and these are some of the names that were listed. So if you happen to find yourself on that list, good for you. I'm sure there are many more. These are just the ones that got mentioned the most frequently. So with that, I'm going to pause. We do have a couple minutes for any questions. I've been looking at the things coming in on chat. There's some questions about metrics. for large versus small partners. Here's a question we can touch on quickly. Do all major IT vendors work on a quarterly release of funds? Just interested to benchmark us against the wider market. I don't know what your thoughts are on that, Jade.
Yeah, so we actually see a mix of quarterly as well as 6 months. That's typically the average between the two.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and a number of programs, certainly for the larger partners, still have some entitlement in the program around earned or accrual-based funds. So that obviously becomes much more linear in line with their revenue goals, and then the proposal-based stuff kind of layers on top of that. We're kind of back, I think, to some more balance between not everything being MDF proposal-based, but for top tiers or high-growth tiers, there being a smaller percentage of accrual, which then proposal-based funds can augment. So, yeah. Okay, got it. So let me just mention the kind of the last thought here. So there are very detailed findings from this broader study. We just gave you the highlights today that we're happy to make you get access to through our Notion Analytics subscription service. The topics that are in the annual plan for that subscription are there on the right, kind of a wide variety of studies we're either just finishing or planning for the rest of the year, this being one of the first ones for 2018. So there's lots of deliverables in here that you can consume, and if you'd like more information about Chainalytics as a subscription service, we'd love to talk to you about that. You can contact either Lisa, who's, of course, organized this webinar for us today, or John Machado, who leads our business development efforts. So with that, Jade, really appreciate your insights, both from your historic perspective and your new job. I'm sure we'd be happy to take any questions about this. If you have any specific, please direct them to Lisa, and we'll follow up from there. So thanks, everyone, for your time. Hope that this at least whets your appetite, and we'll continue the dialogue. Thanks so much.
Thank you.